Deadline by Randy Alcorn. This audio version is published by Oasis Audio through an agreement with Multnomah Publishers. Deadline is read by Frank Muller.
Three pairs of eyes watched as Kansas City's place kicker swung his foot into the ball. The 54-yard field goal was good, the first half over. All right! Doc and Finney slapped a high five over Jake's head. No way! Give me a break! Jake's buddy's celebration added insult to injury. His Seahawks headed for the locker room 10 points down. The three childhood friends, now doctor, businessman, and journalist, slouched back on the recliner couch. Doc occupied one end, Finney the other. As usual, Jake Woods sat between them, feet propped up on a stool and pillow. "Okay, guys," Finney said, "pizza time, let's flip." "Tell you what, Finn," Doc said, "let's just send Jake now and flip later." "Hang on," Jake said, pulling a quarter from his pocket. "This time I'll flip. I think you guys have been rigging this. Let's see how you do against an honest two bits. Okay, this is between you two. I'll take on the loser. Call it, Finn."
"I can't take the pressure."
"Shut up and call it," Doc said. "I'm hungry. You can pray about it later." "Tails," Finney called. The coin landed on the coffee table, which up close showed countless tiny dents from years of halftime coin tosses. The quarter hit on its edge and rolled around like a rim shot. "Son of a..." Doc said under his breath. The quarter had stopped right on its edge, balancing precariously. No heads, no tails. "What are the chances of that happening?" "Girls, look at this." The girls, each in their upper 40s, were fast friends. Married to the Three Musketeers, or the Three Stooges, as they sometimes called them, the girls were destined to spend a lot of time together. Janet wasn't around as often now since her divorce from Jake 3 years ago. But the relationship was amiable, it was a good modern divorce, and Sue and Betsy often persuaded Janet to keep them company during the Sunday afternoon ritual. "Oh, did we miss the coin toss?" Sue, Finney's wife, asked. "Too bad, it's always so exciting." She noted the look on Jake's face. "Lose again, Jake? Hope the Tribune pays you well. We appreciate you keeping us fed." "I didn't lose. No one lost. Look." Sue followed Jake's gaze to the coin on the coffee table. "You're kidding. Don't anyone breathe or it'll fall. So what are you going to do, boys? Toss again?" "Nah," Doc said. "Let's leave it right there. No one wins, no one loses. Let's just all go together." Together. 40 years ago, the three had played army, hunted lions, dug up treasures, and discovered aliens together in the fields and forests of Benton County. Together, they'd exasperated their mothers, annoyed their brothers, harassed their sisters, confounded their teachers. In high school, they each earned letters in three sports, fought side by side in the state championship football game, and took their dates to the prom together. They'd gone off to college, joined ROTC, and graduated together. They'd entered the Army, traveled off to three different parts of the world, then shipped out to Vietnam as greenhorn lieutenants within 3 months of each other. And together they'd gone off on more hunting and camping trips than they could count. This was just Sunday pizza, but together sounded good. "I'll drive." Doc was halfway out the door when he turned. "You made the call, Betsy?" "Sure did. One giant hula-lula and a deep-dish heart attack on a crust. And guys, don't slam the..." The loud crash toppled a photograph from the mantel. "Door," Sue added weakly. Nobody noticed the coin fall on its side. Jake glanced up at the swirling gray of the Oregon sky. It looked as if it had been rubbed hard with a dirty eraser. No rain yet, but the sky felt heavy. A storm's coming, Jake felt certain. Doc hopped in the driver's seat of his cherry red Suburban. Jake scooted to the middle. Finney squeezed against Jake to close the passenger side door. "A man's vehicle," Doc said. "Must have been a thrill to drive it this week, huh, Finn? Made you feel like a man, didn't it? Not one of those wimpy cars driven by guys with low testosterone." "Yeah, I had to pull in for gas every other stoplight," Finney said. "My wimpy car could make it to Tokyo on the gas this monster burns going to Geno's." "Yeah, well, it's still wimpy. You are what you drive." Jake, Finney said, you're awfully quiet. Something wrong? Wasn't that thing with the quarter sort of eerie? You still thinking about that? Doc said. What's the big deal? I don't know. It's almost like it means something. Doc hummed the theme from The Twilight Zone. Don't get spooky on me, old buddy. Things don't mean something, they just happen. Unless you buy into Finney's way of thinking, that is, which someday you may if you get Alzheimer's. One kook's enough for this threesome, right, Finn? Well, Jake, I don't know if the quarter means anything, but I know life does, Finney said. Things have meaning and purpose. Maybe even a coin toss, who knows? Sure, Finn, whatever you say. But I've always found that meaning in life is no substitute for a cold beer with your pizza. Know what I mean, Jake? Doc slapped him on the thigh and turned suddenly into the 7-Eleven, his tires bouncing off the curb. As Doc hopped out, Jake said, it's weird, Finney. Why is that quarter bugging me? It's like it's a sign or something. Maybe it is a sign, Jake. I don't know. Maybe somebody's trying to get through to you again. Jake sighed. Is this a part where you tell me life is a brief window of opportunity and today could be my last day here and I should prepare for eternity or one day I'll stand before God and wish I'd done something different? Finney broke into his dimple-to-dimple grin. Well said. Sounds like you don't need to be told. The question is, what will it take to convince you it's true? I'll say one thing for you, Finn. You're as dependable as Big Ben and Oregon Rain. You always sing the same tune. I'm just looking forward to the day I hear it sung in one of your columns. Don't hold your breath. Suddenly the driver's side door opened and Doc boomed, okay, 6-pack of Coors for me, 3 Buds for Jake, and a Shirley Temple for the preacher. He handed Finney a Diet 7-Up and held up a Coors. This may send me to hell, but it sure washes down the pizza. Come on, Doc, Finney said. You know I've never cared about that. Where you spend eternity isn't about what you drink, it's about who you know. Yeah, yeah, Doc said. Well, I do know the young lady behind the counter at Gino's, and I'd love to get to know her in the biblical sense, if you get my drift. The remaining 3 minutes of the drive seemed destined for wordless discomfort. Jake's mind traveled back to an incident a year earlier when the three were on an overnight duck hunt. Doc flirted with a woman at a truck stop. Just when she was writing down her phone number for him, Finney said, "You're wearing a wedding ring, Doc." In a flash, the woman and her phone number disappeared. Doc turned on Finney with every foul word he knew. Finney was almost as angry at Doc. Later, around the campfire, Finney apologized for getting angry, but he made it clear he wasn't sorry for reminding Doc of his obligation to remain faithful to his wife. A cloud hung over the rest of the hunting trip. The Suburban pulled into Gino's, and Doc bounded out like a man on a mission. Finney and Jake walked quietly behind him. "Hey, sweetheart, I hoped you'd be here." Doc reached across the counter and touched the young girl's arm, his fingers lingering. "Your hair sure looks pretty today." Finney strode toward Doc and slapped him on the back. "She really looks like Molly, doesn't she, Doc? Molly's his teenage daughter, about your age." "Yeah, Doc and his wife have 2 lovely children. Hard to believe, but we must be about your dad's age, maybe older." "Yeah," the girl mumbled. "Whatever, that'll be $28.50. Doc plopped down his Visa, waving off Finney and Jake as they reached for their wallets. No one said anything more until the pizzas were in hand and they headed out the door. "We must be about your dad's age," Doc said sarcastically as they stepped out in the parking lot under a pounding rain. The three jumped in the Suburban and Doc jammed the key into the ignition but didn't turn it. The men sat shoulder to shoulder, each looking straight ahead. Then Doc leaned toward Finney and said, "Oh, what would I do without you, Preacher Finney, Mother Teresa of my life? Thank you. Thank you for being my conscience. It's a tough job, but somebody has to do it." After a moment's pause, Finney added, "You should try it yourself. It might keep you out of trouble." "I don't want to keep out of trouble. What you call trouble is what I call life. What you call life, well," Doc chortled, "how about you watch out for your life and I watch out for mine? Sound like a plan?" And how about I watch out for Sue and my kids, and you watch out for Betsy and yours? Sound like a plan? Doc shook his head in disgust. Finny, you're hopeless. I don't know why we put up with you and your Stone Age morality. You'd have fit right in during the Dark Ages. Doc looked to Jake for a nod of agreement, and Jake turned and gave him a sympathetic look Finny couldn't see. Doc finally started the engine, and Jake drew within himself again. The bantering between his two friends was as familiar as his worn-out bedroom slippers, yet no matter how great the explosion and how far it threw them from each other, something always brought them back together. And Jake was always there, right in the middle. Since turning 50 a few months ago, Jake had paused to think more about the big questions of life. But he didn't really know how to phrase the questions, much less where to go for answers. He'd written in his journal, half a century old now, and I don't have time to think, only to record thoughts. I live under the tyranny of 800 words. He referred to the columns due on his editor's desk by noon every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Finished or not, facts checked out or not, he spoke to 500,000 readers 3 times a week. As together as he appeared on the outside, on the inside, Jake Woods knew his world was a muddle of uncertainty. Suddenly, Doc's roaring voice yanked Jake back to reality. He was yelling at someone on the highway, someone Jake couldn't see through the driving sheets of rain.
Watch where you're going, idiot!
Doc's shoulder jammed into Jake as he threw the Suburban into a sharp swerve to the right. Then Jake heard Doc's loud voice turn from anger to panic.
I can't stop! I can't stop!
A telephone pole and billboard appeared out of nowhere. The Suburban cut through them as if they were jello, then careened into a 10-foot embankment. Jake watched in slow motion the pizza flying up against the windshield just before the bone-crushing impact. Somewhere between the sound of Doc's last cry and the crunch of metal from the car's first roll, Jake lost consciousness. His last sensation was being pressed hard from both sides by two men whose bodies lunged against their harnesses like wild stallions against a corral. Jake's upside-down frame sagged limply, held aloft only by his seatbelt. His body hung between two friends, his soul between two worlds.